this is Justice Radio, a weekly show on WMPG with your host, Nicole Lund, certified alcohol and drug counselor and a person in long-term recovery. I'd like to start this episode by talking a little bit about addiction. Substance use disorders are highly common. In the general population, over 30% struggle with problematic alcohol use and over 10% with other drugs. Since substance use is criminalized, people struggling with addiction are much more likely to end up incarcerated. Approximately 3 million people with substance use disorders are locked up in any given year. More than 60% of incarcerated people suffer from substance use disorder, with an additional 20% of that incarcerated population who are under the influence at the time their crime was committed. So in total, 80% of the prison population in this country is there due to substance use. It is a well-known and often stated concept in recovery that without maintaining sobriety, the consequences of untreated substance use are jails, institutions, and death. Today, to further explore the topic of substance use and recovery, I am speaking with Bobby Smalley, a dear friend and colleague in the recovery community of mine, to hear her story, disentangle some of the stigma associated with addictive disorders, and discuss the importance of community support systems. Welcome to Justice Radio, Bobby, and thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much, Nicole, and I'm very grateful that you asked me to do this. So I'm Bobby, and I have 10 years of sobriety, and I'm part of a 12-step recovery fellowship. For me, staying sober comes with three things: recovery, unity, and service. I really believe that I need to keep all three things equal in my sobriety for my stable life. So recovery is the foundation. Unity means staying connected to community instead of isolating. And service is what keeps it altruistic. It's not just about me staying sober. It's about me giving back. So that's how, you know, it shows up in my volunteer work. I started recovery meetings at Franklin Recovery, and I do a lot of service work in the community. I also just graduated from UMF with my bachelor's, and I'm working towards my master's in psychology.
Yeah, I know you're very active in the recovery community, and you do a lot of service work. Could you tell us a little bit about your story and like how you came to find the community that you did?
Definitely. So before I got sober, my life was completely unmanageable. I lost custody of my four children. My marriage ended in a divorce that was tied to sexual abuse to those children. I ended up living in a tent. I was unemployable. I had lost my home, and I had to fold two of my businesses that I had built. I went through the court system that felt fundamentally unjust to me. The money, and the real mattered more than the truth. And I ended up losing custody to my ex because he had more resources than I did. I was hopeless and I was soul sick. I got to the point where I stood at like a turning point. I had to like either get help or I had to keep going down the path where the drugs and alcohol were going to kill me. And, you know, with the help of my community, I was volunteering at a food pantry. And there was another woman that was, you know, using a program, and she was showing me chips and she was showing me women's numbers. And she invited me to a meeting. And that was when I started to go to meetings and take part in active recovery.
So wow, that's a really powerful story. You know, I'm thinking a lot about the stigma that you must have faced, right? Because, you know, motherhood in itself, I mean, it's this sort of like the institution of motherhood, right? It's this, you know, thing that we consider really sacred in our society. And so to be a person afflicted with addiction like this as a mother, I'm wondering what kind of, you know, shame you may have felt with that stigma attached to it, and how you think this and other stigmas may affect a person's willingness to cope with their shame and seek treatment.
Yeah, Nicole, it was awful. I, you know, when I was a little girl and my Girl Scout leader asked me what I want to be when I grow up, I said, I just want to be a mom. And, you know, what had happened to my family, no one believed me, you know, within like any kind of system. I felt very alone. I felt very isolated. I felt broken. The child, I had five children, so the child that was stayed with me, she was very broken. She lost her siblings. And then I got sober and like life was different. I was a different mom to her. I was trying to learn how to be a mom sober, which is like completely different than, how I was raised. I was raised by a mom with mental illness and substance use and a dad with, substance use that was never around. So I didn't really have any good role models in my life. So now I'm sober. I have one child, four children have been taken by the court system that was totally unjust to what I was doing. And I say taken, but I also have to say that I gave them up because of my addiction, but I didn't choose my addiction. I chose, my addiction was a part of me. It was the way that I coped with the world, and it was a way that I medicated with for my mental illness. So, stigma and shame, it kept me sick for a very long time. It didn't help me get help. I felt like I had to be something that I was not. I didn't want to tell people about, my alcoholism. In the society that I lived in, it like fostered it. It said, this is just, you're supposed to drink, you're supposed to have a good time. And, I was a functioning alcoholic, drug addict. I own businesses. On the outside, it looked okay, but on the inside, it was very sick. So when I was living this way and I lost my kids, and living in a tent and watching two businesses fall apart, the outside world just treated me like I was a moral failure. And the hardest part, was that I didn't know how to get help. If it wasn't for that community of people at the food pantry, loving me and like this woman bringing me into a recovery program, I wouldn't have known how to get help. And when I went in there, they did love me, into the recovery program.
So on this topic of shame, I'm thinking about how 12-step programs really lean into anonymity. And I'm thinking maybe that's what kind of protects people, right? Like, is that like, can you talk a little bit about the anonymity aspect?
Oh yeah, definitely. So like anime is part of the program I'm in. And like I honestly, for myself, I don't mind going out and talking about it to other people and telling people that of my story or where I came from, because I know that it's gonna help somebody. But there's people that come into this program and like they have so much shame and so much guilt and so much remorse, and like there's they're fighting court systems or whatever systems that are like against them, that they just need to like stay like that nobody knows that they're there. So for anonymity, my program is built around it, and it's because it protects people so they can seek help without fear of losing their job, their reputation. Or, like in my case, it could have caused further legal consequences. But I also think silence and stigma feed each other. If nobody who is in recovery ever speaks up, all the public ever sees is addiction, the mugshots and the court cases, and never the people who get better. So for me, I keep my part of my program quiet, but I do speak on the podium and share my story with anyone that I can see it helping, especially mothers that feel extremely hopeless and think that, things are never going to change. But the thing is in within recovery is that with the big acceptance of like how my life used to be, I'm able to know that if I wait a moment or and I do the next right thing, that things are going to change for the better.
Yeah, do the next right thing. That's great. You're listening to Justice Radio with your host, Nicole Lund. Today, we are speaking with Bobby Smalley about addiction and recovery. So I kind of want to talk a little bit more about this, right? This concept of so anonymity, but also outreach and service work.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's like, it's really hard. So I was the secretary for the secret organization. anyways, I was a secretary. So I was like held with like a lot of responsibility of like emails and getting information out to people. Also, I was the chair of a big event held up in Sugarloaf here in Maine. It just happened last weekend. And this was a space that I was able to provide 1,000 people in the recovery world a space to go and feel safe, heal, and hear some amazing speakers from all over the world. You know, speakers that come and they share their last names, and they do that because they want people to seek them out and hear them on YouTube and all the other things. So it's just like, it's very hard space of like, it's private, but it's not private. You know, I understand the traditions of it, and the traditions are there because this organization is the longest lasting organization. It's been around since 1935, and it hasn't failed. It's helping people. A lot of people get a little pushed off by the God part of it, but the nice thing is that you get to go in there and you get to create your own God.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't have to go with what somebody's shoving down my throat. And that's really helpful for me because when I know that I'm not the highest powers of the universe, because sometimes when not sometimes, but when I'm using, I think I'm my own God. I give it over to something bigger than me, and I don't have to explain that.
Yeah.
So I know that got a little bit off topic.
No, it's okay. I'm thinking about, you know, the concept of peer support, right? That is provided at recovery centers and things like
mm-hmm.
that. So, you know, myself working in a mental health clinic where it's like a much more formal setting and there's, you know, these like self-disclosure rules and all these sorts of things. When you come to see a licensed clinician, which I support seeing a licensed clinician, obviously being one. And I think there's a huge benefit to that. I think there's also this amazing benefit to seeking out these sort of more informal spaces like recovery centers and meetings, you know, the church basement with a coffee pot and a room of peers, so that you can hear stories from other people in, you know, in a different setting and meet people that you can relate to. And so it definitely gives that community feel, right? Where you're not so alone. It isn't just me, like in that environment.
Yeah. And I completely agree with you. And, you know, I worked with a sponsor this morning, and everything that she talks to me about, I can say, yeah, I did that too, honey. And it's okay. And you're in a good space. And, you know, because, and it's going to get better because it got better for me. And that's that peer support. That's that human connection that we really need. So a lot of these recovery centers and even the things that we learn in our master's program or our programs in school are built on the peer support and connection and getting to know each other. But I have to tell my sponsees, like, get outside help, because one thing is not going to help me. It's many things. And like, I was lucky enough that as I went through my program, like the right counselor came and the right physician came and the right chiropractor came, and all these things, you know, were able to help me and my children. Because when I got custody back of them, because I did get custody back of them after 1 year of sobriety, they were really messed up. And but they came back to a mom that had serenity and peace because I was sober. I wasn't the best mom. I was learning how to be a parent, but I gave them as much as I could. And I needed outside help to help these children heal and grow. Now they're all young adults, and you know, they're doing really well. They came to the giant recovery work thing that we just put on over the weekend, and like, and that's all they talked about is how much fun that was. So, you know, to have kids that are just turning of age to drink alcohol going to a recovery event with their mom is, it's amazing. You know, I, you know, we talked a little bit being a mom and all that. I have to say that being a mom and being sober is so much better because I get to have these beautiful relationships with these young people, and I get to like not push my will into their lives, but just love them for who they are and where they're at. And that's really about what being a parent is. It's not about, you know, telling them how to run their lives. It's about being a part of their lives with them.
Oh, it's really beautiful. I'm getting choked up listening to you. Especially being as a, you know, a mother in recovery herself. You know, I'm thinking about that aspect too, and you know, there's probably some of this in your life and most people. I mean, addiction is just so often generational, right? So being able to like be somebody in the family lineage who's like, you know what, like we're stopping this, like this is going to stop, and then being able to, you know, just like be better for your kids and hopefully like, you know, influence them to teach them, you know, adaptive coping skills and other ways to kind of face the world than through substances. It's such a beautiful thing.
I think that too, it's like you said, breaking the cycle. And how do we break the cycle? We break the cycle as like a mom, but or a parent, but parents don't always know how to get help. So where do they have to go to get help? They have to go to their community. So communities are setting up spaces where parents and moms and people can get help to break that cycle. It takes a community to break the cycle. It takes a village to raise an alcoholic. It takes a village to raise a child. We need each other. You know, God, my creator, my universe, it wants me to be connected with you. It wants me to help you. When I take my days and I say, okay, God, put me in the way of someone that needs help. And then I just like, I let my day go as it is. I'm taking me out of the equation, and someone is always there that I can help to make their day a little bit better. And when I make their day a little bit better, that's starting to break that cycle of addiction. We have a younger generation. You know, I go to UMF. I'm with younger kids. They are very in tune with their feelings. They are very good at saying what they need. This is a very different generation than the one you and I grew up with. We were told to shut up, sit back, deal with it, stop crying, no feeling. So as parents, we're trying to break that. So we're learning. I'm learning a lot from the younger generation, of how to do this. And I want to be a better adult for them and help them make this a better world.
Yeah, I understand that completely. And I think it's one of the things is when people get sober is that they think like, okay, now I want to learn how to be an adult and all the fun is over. But there's actually like so much fun and joy to be had in sobriety and recovery. You know, like the first event like you were talking about, I was so happy to be able to come to that event last weekend, and it was so much fun. And there's so many things about it too, right? Like I used to dance a lot, and I was part of the rave scene and everything else back in my heyday. And thinking about like I would never be able to dance again once I got sober, because like how do you dance sober?
That was exactly the experience I had at my first roundup. I stood in the middle of the dance floor and I was like, I don't know how these people are doing this. Like, I really thought everybody around me was using, and I thought they were all lying to me. I was like, there's no way there's 900 people on this mountain that are sober, but they were. And that is why it's so important for me to go to these events, is because, like, I need to have some fun. And I started to feel a little stagnant in my recovery. And I stood for the roundup chair, and God put me in that position, because I won it through a God hat. And obviously I was scared, and I was like, why are they giving all this responsibility to this drunk? And but I'm not the same person like that I used to be. I'm a new person. I'm the person that I always wanted to be, that God always wanted me to be. And I'm trying to like learn how to grow into that person. So like, even with longer term sobriety, like I'm still learning, and I'm still learning how to deal with my emotions. I'm still learning how to deal with my past. I get to do that with other people. So when you go to one of these really great events with lots of people and speakers and workshops and ice cream socials and dances and recovery singers, you get to heal, you get to have fun, you get to find love, you get to give love, and you get to learn how to be a part of society that you used to despise. So for me, having fun in sobriety is so important. I think next weekend we're gonna possibly go do a whitewater rafting trip with a bunch of sober women. And I'm looking forward to these times, because each one of them gives me growth and wisdom and healing. So thanks. When you came last to the event, Nicole, you were like glowing, and I could tell that you were having such a good time. And that's, you're just one person that was there, and every person that was there had an experience like that. And it's like the ripple effect. You know, if I do this and I am smiling and I'm having a good time, you see that and you want to jump on that ripple. And I pray that that's all I do for the rest of my life, is I just create a ripple effect for my community and the people around me to be like, hey, sobriety looks really good.
Sobriety looks very good on you, I can say. So I want to thank you so much for being here today and your willingness to share your story. I know this is such a tough subject for people to talk about, but I think it's so important that these stories are shared. Is there anything else you'd like to add that we haven't spoken about or provided some information on how people can find out more about sobriety and recovery events and services?
Yeah, I'm really grateful for you to ask me and for being here. I'm not particularly the best interviewee, but I will do anything to help my community. If anybody's listening to this, if you took the time to listen, I want to say that if you're standing in a space where you're completely hopeless, you're soul sick, and you don't know which direction to go into, and that you think in that drugs and alcohol are your only solution, try to make a change. I challenge you to just reach out to somebody and say, I need help. A lot of times, if we reach out to our loved ones and say that we can't do this anymore, they'll help us. The universe will find you a way to healing. One of the things that there's three things that I say actually to all my sponsees. If you have the willingness to ask for help, the honesty to talk about where you are, and the open-mindedness to listen and take suggestions, then you're on your way to a better life of recovery. I'm sure Nicole has a list of resources for our community. 10 years ago, I lost everything, and today I have a life that I never thought I would have. And I hope for that for you too, for all of you that are listening. So thanks for listening to us today, and I love you.
Thank you so much, Bobby. So, listeners, if you want to visit the Justice Radio show page on WMPG.org for archived episodes aired on WMPG, WERU, and WMHB. So, big thank you to our editor, Aaron Pyle, and to Samuel James for his gift of music that opens and closes each episode in our series. Thank you so much again, Bobby, for being here.
Thank you.